The Consolidator, or Memoirs of Sundry Transactions from the World and the Moon. Translated from the Lunar Language, by the author of The True-Born Englishman. It cannot be unknown to any that have traveled into the dominions of the Tsar of Muscovy, that this famous rising monarch, having studied all methods for the increase of his power, and the enriching as well as polishing his subjects, has traveled through most part of Europe, and visited the courts of the greatest princes, from whence, by his own observation, as well as by carrying with him artists in most useful knowledge, he has transmitted most of our general practice, especially in war and trade, to his own unpolite people, and the effects of this curiosity of his are exceeding visible in his present proceedings. For by the improvements he obtained in his European travels, he has modeled his armies, formed new fleets, settled foreign negus in several remote parts of the world, and we now see his forces besieging strong towns, with regular approaches, and his engineers raising batteries, throwing bombs, and sea like other nations, whereas before, they had nothing of order among them, but carried all by onslaught and scalado, wherein they either prevailed by the force of irresistible multitude, or were slaughtered by heaps, and left the ditches of their enemies filled with their dead bodies. We see their armies now formed into regular battalions, and their strelitz musketeers, a people equivalent to the Turks Janissaries, clothed like our guards, firing in platoons, and behaving themselves with extraordinary bravery and order. We see their ships now completely fitted, built and furnished, by the English and Dutch artists, and their men of war crews in the Baltic. Their new city of Petersburg, built by the present Tsar, begins now to look like our Portsmouth, fitted with wet and dry docks, storehouses, and magazines of naval preparations, vast and incredible, which may serve to remind us how we once taught the French to build ships, till they are grown able to teach us how to use them. As to trade, our large fleets to Archangel may speak for it, where we now send 100 sail yearly, instead of 8 or 9 which were the greatest number we ever sent before, and the importation of tobaccos from England into his dominions would still increase the trade thither, was not the covetousness of our own merchants the obstruction of their advantages. But all this by the by. As this great monarch has improved his country, by introducing the manners and customs of the politer nations of Europe, so, with indefatigable industry, he has settled a new, but constant trade, between his country and China, by land, where his caravans go twice or thrice a year, as numerous almost, and as strong, as those from Egypt to Persia. Nor is the way shorter, or the deserts they pass over less wild and uninhabitable, only that they are not so subject to flouts of sand, if that term be proper, or to troops of Arabs, to destroy them by the way. For this powerful prince, to make this terrible journey feasible to his subjects, has built forts, planted colonies and garrisons at proper distances, where, though they are seated in countries entirely barren, and among uninhabited rocks and sands, yet, by his continual furnishing them from his own stores, the merchants traveling are relieved on good terms, and meet both with convoy and refreshment. More might be said of the admirable decorations of this journey, and how so prodigious an attempt is made easy, so that now they have an exact correspondence, and drive a prodigious trade between Moscow and Tonquin, but having a longer voyage in hand, I shall not detain the reader, nor keep him till he grows too big with expectation. Now, as all men know, the Chineses are an ancient, wise, polite, and most ingenious people, so the Muscovites begun to reap the benefit of this open trade, and not only to grow exceeding rich by the bartering for all the wealth of those eastern countries, but to polish and refine their customs and manners as much on that side as they have from their European improvements on this. And as the Chinese have many sorts of learning which these parts of the world never heard of, so all those useful inventions which we admire ourselves so much for, are vulgar and common with them, and were in use long before our parts of the world were inhabited. Thus gunpowder, printing, and the use of the magnet and compass, which we call modern inventions, are not only far from being inventions, but fall so far short of the perfection of art they have attained to, that it is hardly credible what wonderful things we are told of from thence, and all the voyages the author has made thither being employed another way, have not yet furnished him with the particulars fully enough to transmit them to view. Not but that he is preparing a scheme of all those excellent arts those nations are masters of, for public view, by way of detection of the monstrous ignorance and deficiencies of European science, which may serve as a lexicon technicum for this present age, with useful diagrams for that purpose, wherein I shall not fail to accent the world, 1. With the art of gunnery, as practiced in China long before the War of the Giants, and by which those presumptuous animals fired red-hot bullets right up into heaven, and made a breach sufficient to encourage them to a general storm, but being repulsed with great slaughter, they gave over the siege for that time. This memorable part of history shall be a faithful abridgment of Ibra Chisralopoeglazer, historiographer royal to the Emperor of China, who wrote Anno Mundi 114. His volumes extant, in the public library at Tonquin, printed in leaves of vitrified diamond, by an admirable dexterity, struck all at an oblique motion, the engine remaining inter, and still fit for use, in the chamber of the Emperor's rarities. And here I shall give you a draft of the engine itself, and a plan of its operation, and the wonderful dexterity of its performance. If these labors of mine shall prove successful, I may in my next journey that way, take an abstract of their most admirable tracts in navigation, and the mysteries of Chinese mathematics, which outdo all modern invention at that rate, that 'tis inconceivable. In this elaborate work I must run through the 365 volumes of Agromachi Languorozai, the most ancient mathematician in all China. From thence I shall give a description of a fleet of ships of 100,000 sail, built at the expense of the Emperor Tangro XV, who, having notice of the general deluge, prepared these vessels, to every city and town in his dominions one, and in bulk proportioned to the number of its inhabitants, into which vessel all the people, with such movables as they thought fit to save, and with 120 days' provisions, were received at the time of the flood, and the rest of their goods, being put into great vessels made of China ware, and fast looted down on the top, were preserved unhurt by the water. These ships they furnished with 600 fathom of chain instead of cables, which being fastened by wonderful arts to the earth, every vessel rid out the deluge just at the town's end, so that when the waters abated, the people had nothing to do, but to open the doors made in the ship sides, and come out, repair their houses, open the great china pose their goods were in, and so put themselves in statu quo. The draft of one of these ships I may perhaps obtain by my interest in the present emperor's court, as it has been preserved ever since, and constantly repaired, riding at anchor in a great lake, about 100 miles from Tonquin, in which all the people of that city were preserved, amounting by their computation to about 1.5 million. And as these things must be very useful in these parts, to abate the pride and arrogance of our modern undertakers of great enterprises, authors of strange foreign accounts, philosophical transactions, and the like, if time and opportunity permit, I may let them know how infinitely we are outdone by those refined nations in all manner of mechanic improvements and arts. And in discoursing of this, it will necessarily come in my way to speak of a most noble invention, being an engine I would recommend to all people to whom 'tis necessary to have a good memory, and which I design, if possible, to obtain a draft of, that it may be erected in our Royal Society's laboratory. It has the wonderfulest operations in the world. One part of it furnishes a man of business, to dispatch his affairs strangely. For if he be a merchant, he shall write his letters with one hand, and copy them with the other. If he is posting his books, he shall post the debtor side with one hand, and the creditor with the other. If he be a lawyer, he draws his drafts with one hand, and ingresses them with the other. Another part of it furnishes him with such an expeditious way of writing, or transcribing, that a man cannot speak so fast, but he that hears, shall have it down in writing before it is spoken, and the preacher shall deliver himself to his auditory, and having this engine before him, shall put down everything he says in writing at the same time. And so exactly is this engine scored by lines and rules, that it does not require him that writes to keep his eye upon it. I am told, in some parts of China, they had arrived to such a perfection of knowledge, as to understand one another's thoughts, and that it was found to be an excellent preservative to humane society, against all sorts of frauds, cheats, sharping, and many thousand European inventions of that nature, at which only we can be said to outdo those nations. I confess, I have not yet had leisure to travel those parts, having been diverted by an accidental opportunity of a new voyage I had occasion to make for farther discoveries, and which the pleasure and usefulness thereof having been very great, I have omitted the other for the present, but shall not fail to make a visit to those parts the first opportunity, and shall give my countrymen the best account I can of those things. For I doubt not in time to bring our nation, so famed for improving other people's discoveries, to be as wise as any of those heathen nations. I wish I had the same prospect of making them half so honest. I had spent but a few months in this country, but my search after the prodigy of humane knowledge the people abounds with, led me into acquaintance with some of their principal artists, engineers, and men of letters, and I was astonished at every day's discovery of new and of unheard of worlds of learning. But I improved in the superficial knowledge of their general, by nobody, so much as by my conversation with the library keeper of Tonquin, by whom I had admission into the vast collection of books, which the emperors of that country have treasured up. It would be endless to give you a catalogue, and they admit of no strangers, to write anything down, but what the memory can retain, you are welcome to carry away with you. And amongst the wonderful volumes of antient and modern learning, I could not but take notice of a few, which, besides those I mentioned before, I saw when I looked over this vast collection, and a larger account may be given in our next. It would be needless to transcribe the Chinese character, or to put their alphabet into our letters, because the words would be both unintelligible and very hard to pronounce. And therefore, to avoid hard words and hieroglyphics, I'll translate them as well as I can. The first class I came to of books was the Constitutions of the Empire. These are vast great volumes, and have a sort of engine like our Magna Charta, to remove them, and with placing them in a frame, by turning a screw, open it the leaves, and fold it them this way, or that, as the reader desires. It was present death for the library keeper to refuse the meanest Chinese subject to come in and read them, for it is their maxim that all people ought to know the laws by which they are to be governed. And as above all people, we find no fools in this country, so the emperors, though they seem to be arbitrary, enjoy the greatest authority in the world, by always observing, with the greatest exactness, the pacta conventa of their government. From these principles it is impossible we should ever hear, either of the tyranny of princes, or rebellion of subjects, in all their histories. At the entrance into this class, you find some ancient comments upon the Constitution of the Empire, written many ages before we pretend the world began. But above all, one I took particular notice of which might bear this title, Natural Right Profit Superior to Temporal Power, wherein the old author proves, the Chinese emperors were originally made so, by nature's directing the people, to place the power of government in the most worthy person they could find, and the author giving a most exact history of 2,000 emperors, brings them into about 35, or 36 periods of lines when the race ended, and when a collective assembly of the nobles, cities, and people, nominated a new family to the government. This being an heretical book, as to European politics, and our learned authors having long since exploded this doctrine, and proved that kings and emperors came down from heaven with crowns on their heads, and all their subjects were born with saddles on their backs, I thought fit to leave it where I found it, least our excellent tracts of Sir Robert Filmer, Dr. Hammond 50. .Y.S. .L, and others, who have so learnedly treated of the more useful doctrine of passive obedience, divine right, and see should be blasphemed by the mob, grow into contempt of the people, and they should take upon them to question their superiors for the blood of Algernon Sidney and Argyle. For I take the doctrines of passive obedience, and see among the statesmen, to be like the Copernican system of the earth's motion among philosophers, which, though it be contrary to all antient knowledge, and not capable of demonstration, yet is adhered to in general, because by this, they can better solve, and give a more rational account of several dark phenomena in nature, than they could before. Thus our modern statesmen approve of this scheme of government. Not that it admits of any rational defense, much less of demonstration, but because by this method they can the better explain, as well as defend, all coercion in cases invasive of natural right, than they could before. Here I found two famous volumes in chirurgery, being an exact description of the circulation of the blood, discovered long before King Solomon's allegory of the buckets going to the well, with several curious methods by which the demonstration was to be made so plain, as would make even the worthy Dr. B. himself become a convert to his own eyesight, make him damn his own elaborate book, and think it worse nonsense than ever the town had the freedom to imagine. All our philosophers are fools, and their transactions a parcel of empty stuff, to the experiments of the royal societies in this country. Here I came to a learned tract of Wynne's, which outdoes even the sacred text, and would make us believe it was not wrote to those people, for they tell folks whence it comes, and whither it goes. There you have an account, how to make glasses of hawk's eyes, that can see the wind, and they give strange accounts both of its regular and irregular motions, its compositions and quantities, from whence, by a sort of algebra, they can cast up its duration, violence, and extent. In these calculations, some say, those authors have been so exact, that they can, as our philosophers say of comets, state their revolutions, and tell us how many storms there shall happen to any period of time, and when, and perhaps this may be with much about the same truth. It was a certain sign Aristotle had never been to China, for, had he seen the 216th volume of the Chinese Navigation, in the library I am speaking of, a large book in double folio, wrote by the famous Mira Chou Chou Lasmo, vice-admiral of China, and said to be printed there about 2,000 years before the deluge, in the chapter of tides he would have seen the reason of all the certain and uncertain fluxes and refluxes of that element, how the exact pace is kept between the moon and the tides, with a most elaborate discourse there, of the power of sympathy, and the manner how the heavenly bodies influence the earthly. Had he seen this, the Stagirite would never have drowned himself, because he could not comprehend this mystery. 'Tis farther related of this famous author, that he was no native of this world, but was born in the moon, and coming hither to make discoveries, by a strange invention arrived to by the virtuosos of that habitable world, the emperor of China prevailed with him to stay, and improve his subjects, in the most exquisite accomplishments of those lunar regions. And no wonder the Chinese are such exquisite artists, and masters of such sublime knowledge, when this famous author has blessed them with such unaccountable methods of improvement. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.